And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 203. I'm your host, Silas Lindenstein. Welcome to Seattle's longest-running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. I am Silas Lindenstein. Samantha's on assignment. Today, I have another interview. You know, I get these interviews during the day. Samantha's not available, so it's hard right now, but trying to figure that out still. But, yeah. But we got it. I got this interview today with, there's actually three people. There's a new documentary coming out this Friday, July 1st, in theaters and video on demand. It's called Accepted. And I have the director and two of the documentary subjects on it. The film Accepted, it was a Tribeca Festival film. And accepted to the Tribeca Film Festival. I was very interested in the premise, so I wanted to interview when the press day came up, I wanted to interview both the subjects and the director. So I got them all together in one room for a little short, like 20-minute interview. So it's not too long, not a big episode today. But I think I'm definitely going to talk to at least one of them. So the director's name is Dan Chen. And then we interviewed Isaac and Adi on here. And let me just read the synopsis of this film, which I really enjoyed. Accepted synopsis. Four high school seniors in rural Louisiana attend T.M. Landry, an unconventional K-12 school housed in a sparse warehouse made famous for sending its graduates to elite universities like Harvard, Yale, and Stanford. The students aim to meet the intense expectations of Mike Landry, the imposing founder of the school, who charts a relentless course toward their college dreams. When the New York Times publishes an expose on Landry's controversial methods, the school buckles under the scrutiny. Each senior is left to contend with uncomfortable truths about their school and the college admission system, and decide for themselves what they are willing to do to be accepted. Accepted offers a unique and intriguing look at the world of Ivy League school college admissions and the true cost of getting that first foothold into elite American society. In its first documentary feature, director Dan Chen grounds a broader look at the inequities in the American education system with an unbelievable access to T.M. Landry and the deeply personal stories of four dynamic students looking to overcome countless obstacles to achieve their dreams. Now, my family is very much into education. My father and stepmother are educators. My mother-in-law was an educator. My father-in-law is a lawyer, but he was on the school board. So education is very important in our family. So seeing this come up and then seeing about the school in Louisiana who is getting all these kids accepted to Ivy League schools, I was fascinated, and I somehow missed the news when all this happened. They broke out, they went viral about all these kids getting accepted, and I wanted to watch the film. I honestly didn't read the second part of the synopsis. I was so interested in it. So I started watching it. And then in the midway, it turns and suddenly, I don't know that it's a house of cards or what, but it all changes for them. And it's kind of exciting. And this documentary was filming already when it all happened. And it's fascinating. So I want you to listen to the story, listen to their experience in the documentary. I asked them one of the world famous seven questions. So if I can get them back on, I will finish those out. We'll get their whole story. So yeah. So that's the episode today. Again, if you like us, if you like the show, please go to iTunes, give a 5-star review. If you want to be a Patreon supporter, go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. And for little as $1 a month, $1, you can be a member of the League of Extraordinary Listeners. And of course, upgrade that a little bit and you can become an Inner Circle member like Stephen Ward, Keith Nagel, Tara Widener. Be one of them. Step up your game and support Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Why is he doing a documentary episode today? What's funny about that? Well, nothing. But it's about disenfranchised folks, and we like to focus on that and bring up those issues. We're not just comedy all the time. We're funny. Looking. Okay, so here we go. Thank you so much for listening. Oh, also check out my other podcast, You're Buying a Home, with Silas Sundenstein, where I educate and empower home buyers all over the nation. You can listen to that anywhere that you listen to podcasts, especially if you're interested in buying a home or know someone who is, send them that way. But that's, anywhere you listen to this podcast or go to yourbuyingahome.com. But that is that podcast, and this is this one. So I want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 203, Accepted.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by, stand by.
I'm also Yo. Black and a half.
Hey. You can come on. So we're a comedy podcast normally, but I love, I'm also a filmmaker, and anything about black people I'm interested in. And the story caught my eye. I think I slept on it. I was the only person in America that had not heard of this school. And I was reading it to my wife. And then I was like, I started watching the film and the swerve of what happened in the school. I'm watching the documentary and like, I was like, oh, this is a story about this awesome school that is just, it is wonderful. Dan, when you went to the school, did you have any idea that not everything was right in Memphis?
We had heard about the school when the viral videos were going around. So when the school was kind of being famously shown on Ellen, on Steve Harvey, on Good Morning America. And so we kind of came in with the context of this is a school that's batting against the odds, right? That's sending kids from rural Louisiana, predominantly black, predominantly minority, to Ivy League schools. And that's the information we had going in. So we had no idea what would end up happening.
Okay. And Isaac and AD, like, I was trying to remember from the documentary, when did you each join the school? Was it early on, or was it late in your academics?
I joined much later. I joined much later. I joined my junior year of high school. By this point, they had moved to their largest building. And they had been there, for about 2 years, year and a half, maybe?
I got there my freshman year
of
high school also. I got expelled and I went there immediately the summer. So I got expelled my last day of my freshman year of high school. Okay.
Okay.
For pot brownies. Okay. Okay. And I went to the school for like a second chance. And I was there. So we had cycled through two buildings whenever I was there. Maybe one building. We went from a daycare that was housing about 70 kids preschool to 12th grade. And then by the time I was a junior or senior, which is when Isaac came in, because we're the same age, that was 2.5 years later. And so we went from 70, 75 kids to about 120. Sorry, about 120. And that was when we were at the largest building that we had been at. And that was the last building that I believe that they were in besides one in Lafayette.
So you went as a second chance, but I mean, you had other choices, right? Was it your only choice?
I did have other choices as in like, I mean, the only other choice I really had was going to a Catholic private school because of the fact that I had been expelled from the public school system. It was either I went to the independent school or I went to a Catholic high school where I would have to be baptized and I would have to adapt to Catholic ideals, even though I am not religious. Yeah. So it was like, you know, like I'd rather pay less to go to an independent school that could get me into an Ivy League college rather than going to the local private school that is completely involved in Christianity, which is something that I'm just not a part of.
Yeah.
So TM Landry was the best option for me, you know?
Did you, when you first got there, was it, cause I was wondering, like, I wonder if your experience was mine, like watching the documentary, cause I'm listening to this and going like, he's got it going on. And then I was like, oh, that seems like a little much, but no. Okay. I get it. It's successful. Is that how you felt going in? Did he pull you in right away? And
going in, he pulled me in immediately because math has always been my strong suit, first of all. And honestly, Mike's biggest flex was that he could teach math to anybody. Hmm. And I walked into the school the first day I was doing my tour, and there was only four rooms in this tiny daycare, preschool to 12th grade. Okay. And I walked in and there's a whiteboard, just a whiteboard, like on like wheels. And there's third graders, second graders, like kids sitting in the front. And he's like, how well do you know fractions? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like I can multiply, add, divide, fractions, whatever. And he put up on the board literal shapes underneath like fractions. And I was like, what the hell is that? And he was like, can you do this? And I was like, no, like, I don't know what that is. And he was like, he told one of the little children to get up and do it. And I watched this 7-year-old get up on the board and multiply fractions that had shapes in them, like a squiggly line, a triangle, and a smiley face on either side. Like, okay. It was so crazy. He hooked me in immediately. He was like,
was that a real equation?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, like, it is.
Like, maybe. It would have been a nice little trick to have every time someone comes in. Okay, we're doing the bit. We're doing the.
Well, the thing about Mike was he taught us how to do math without using numbers and using the process, which is what initially hooked me into being there in the first place, is because he taught us how to do things by concept rather than by problem, which is a problem in our current education system now. And he sat there and explained to me how beneficial this way of learning was. And I was like, you know what? As a second chance, I feel like this is the most beneficial place I could be. And
Did music class involve imagining the instruments? Did he watch Music Man? Was that his whole thing? He was just a big music
man. I actually taught a music class. You know, I don't know. That's not implemented in the documentary, but we were the teachers at school. And I taught French, sign language, and music to the children. Oh. So I was the music teacher, actually. That's
hilarious.
Crazy.
Isaac, was it a similar experience just walking in that you were drawn in right away? Was there skepticism? Because you were a little older when you stepped in, right?
Yeah, so there was always this wall of skepticism that kind of, I guess, protected me from fully involving myself into Mike's ideals. There was this naivety because I had never been that involved in the application process. And so a lot of what Mike said was kind of me saying like, oh yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. I don't know any better. But a lot of his mind games that he played with most of the students that had gotten to a lot of the other students that had been there for a long time, I tried to keep myself away from, you know. Mike is a very, very flamboyant person, and he changes what he says and what he does to appeal to whoever's in front of him at the time to get them to come in. You know, I went into the school. My brother had gone there previously, and something that I learned from my brother is to be a skeptic, you know, skepticism is your friend, you know, don't just take something at face value. And so I knew that some parts of school had worked for him, and I figured that maybe they could work for me, but I didn't see that as a guarantee. There were some things that I liked. A lot of the self-teaching aspect of it was amazing. You know, I spent a lot of time on myself. Other students helped a lot of the other students more. And that's something that I loved. That's probably like my favorite part, is just the fact that there's a big emphasis on helping other students. But it got to a point whenever Mike wasn't even helping the students, and it was us. And so the idea that this school was made for the students seemed like he wasn't doing that anymore. It seems like it was just us holding it up. And I remember at one point I pulled our friend Alicia, she's in the film. I pulled our friend Alicia into a room, and I was like, okay, like what's going on now? Like, what are we supposed to do at this point? What's going on? And I remember we were talking about it, and one of the teachers, Miss Tattoo, she came in the room and she was like, you guys, this is a conversation to have. Like, I don't know if you're aware, Miss Tattoo, one of the teachers, she ended up leaving the school, and she started her own smaller school. She realized something was going on too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was definitely something that it caught my eye, as in it was alternative learning.
Yeah.
And it had the ability to help a lot of students, but then it turned more of just into a business proposal.
Do you feel
it didn't
like
seem it, like there was hard involved?
Do you feel like what was started, did it just get too big, or was it just rotten at its core?
I don't think at all it was rotten at its core. Okay. I think it was started in good faith, but I think Michael Landry got ahead of himself. I think that once the lights were on him and a lot of these other people were interviewing him day after day after day, and he was getting all this attention, I think that he lost what he was supposed to be doing at that time. I get that having this, and it was a product, it was something that he wanted to sell, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing. But it started turning into something a lot worse than it should have. It was out of good intention, I believe, and from what I've heard, but it started turning into something a lot worse.
Okay. So Dan, when you were, because it seems like you had a friendship, like there was an exchange at, like, it looked like the, was it the graduation ceremony that's in the film where you, he's like, well, no, we can't have anybody in now. We're not, like, we don't want. Like, and was that you talking to
him? No, actually that was, so the way we did the film was, it was a small core team of filmmakers. It was myself. It was our producer, Jesse, our producer, Jason, our cinematographer, Daphne, and our sound person, Carrie. And then we had a few folks come in and out when certain folks weren't available. And so I remember that graduation ceremony. I am the camera following 80 as she leaves the car and goes in, and you see my camera just like kind of go down, because I immediately start talking to one of the parents there. The camera that's inside is Jesse, who is a producer on the film. And so he's like kind of getting a wide shot of the graduation. And then Mike comes and says, hey, you got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a tense moment, because I think at that point, we, understanding that it's a complicated issue around the school and like, what is it doing well and what is it doing that's wrong, right? But I think honestly, we were just invested in, I hope the class of 2019 kids are doing well. And I hope that, you know, we want to show their graduation ceremony. We want to show that TM Landry is continuing to send kids to college, and we can still have a discussion on what that means to viewers, right? But it was just an interesting moment where he's kind of like, hey, I don't trust you anymore. I don't trust media in general. So, get out.
Were you freaked out at all that your film was in jeopardy because without access to it, like them just cutting you off?
So we, I'll put it this way. Like, the film had died like 3 times before we even got to that point. So at that point, we're honestly kind of like not scared of anything. We're kind of like, look, we're going to do our best to tell the story. If they tell us to leave, we'll politely leave. That's okay. We'll get what we can get. And really the core of the story is our investment and our relationship to these students and Kathy and Alicia, who aren't here in this interview. I feel like they're the core of the film. And so because we started with them and we had that footage with them, no matter what our relationship with Mike was, which was really complicated and had its own ups and downs, and we're in and we're out and he likes us and he hates us. But really what kept the film alive and what kept us going was these students and these stories. And
so did you feel, I was curious, Isaac and Adi, like, you're getting filmed this whole time. Do you develop a relationship with the camera people? Like, do absolutely. They seem like family, friends? Like, what is that like, being the subject?
Absolutely. I forgot who they were from. There was another film crew that was there at one point. Can't tell you any of their names. They didn't really want to.
No, really?
They were kind of assholes. Dan and Jesse and Daphne and the crew, they were all super inviting. They never pushed us to say or do anything that we didn't want to. If there was one of us that looked extremely unphotogenic, Dan would politely say, "Hey, turn your head this way," or something like that. But
I don't remember that, by the way, but that's funny.
No, but it was always super, super easy and fun to work with them. Whenever they weren't filming, they were talking to us. I was pretty interested in the filming process. So whenever they weren't filming, I would ask them about stuff and they would gladly tell me about it. It was extremely easy to work with them. And I definitely formed a friendship with them. I mean, whenever I first found out about this interview, I called Jesse just to talk to him. Hmm. It was, they're my friends. You know, I love all these guys and I would gladly just sit down to eat with them one day or just talk. And that's how it was throughout most of the filming. You know, I know they wanted to make a documentary, but they were my friends. So I was like, yeah, like, sure, you can come over and film me waking up or something. Yeah, I don't mind. Yeah.
I'm literally going to LA for the premiere, and I'm pretty sure that I'm staying at one of their houses whenever I go over there. And honestly, like, the bond that was formed between all of us, like, through the filming process, is something that is unbreakable at this point. Honestly, these people have become my family and they've always been inviting. And I guess that's just also just Jubilee motto, you know, like the good humans and all that. But they're just, it was always so inviting. And honestly, they never made us feel out of place for anything. And especially at that point in our lives, like being adolescents, I mean, like having those people around while you're growing and they're literally filming you and still having the relationship that we did and maintaining that, it's something unbreakable. And I'll love these people for the rest of my life.
That's awesome. Adi, is that a ukulele?
Yeah, it is.
I wish I had brought mine so we could have jammed at the end of this. I'm in love with ukuleles right now.
Well, I am a musician. If you watch the film, you saw me playing at the end of the movie. So if you ever want to do something, I'll come on your podcast. Hey. How about that?
We always have creatives on. You know, I don't have enough time to ask you all these world famous Black and a Half 7 questions, but I just got to get my one in that I want to know from each of you. My number one question is, what are you most nerdy about just in life? What's the thing that you deep dive into more than anything? So what are you most nerdy about? Can we start? Dan?
I know I'm nerdy about a ton of things and I'm blanking right now. And that's why I'm shifting in my chair. My fiance Ariel would tell you way more about what I'm nerdy about. It's a lot of stuff.
Dan's the cameraman.
Come back to me.
Okay. Adi, what are you most nerdy about?
I guess like processes, like math, things like that. Sadly enough, Mike rubbed off on me in a little bit of a way. But my music structure, I use formulas for my music structure 24/7. Everything is a math formula. Whenever I write it, everything, it has to be in perfect patterns. Even if it doesn't make sense to other people, has to be in a pattern. I'm very weird. I'm OCD. So like there are certain things that just have to fall into place. Yeah, I guess that's my most nerdy thing is like my music structure.
Okay. Isaac?
It's got to be cars. I could
talk it off about
Motorhead, anything. Hence why I'm part of my school's racing team.
Okay.
Yeah, it's you can't really talk about it with normal people. They get bored really fast. So anytime you find somebody else who does it, you just kind of talk a lot about things. But yeah, it's definitely cars.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, I found the thing.
Okay,
I'll admit it. Like, I'm a total movie nerd. Like, my life kind of revolves around this. My fiance, Ariel, she also works in the film industry, and she's one of the editors on this movie. And we often, like, speak in movie quotes. And the funny thing about Accepted is now Accepted is a movie. Yeah. And so, AD and Isaac, it's, like, embarrassing, but we, like, quote you all the time. So, it's super embarrassing. We were just talking about it last night, like, they would be so like, they would think we're such nerds that they knew how much I'll go like, for example, I'll be like, it sucks. It really does. Which is, you know, like whenever I, you know, encounter something bad, I'm like, yeah, it sucks. It really does. I'm like, I don't know. We just, it's funny. We've seen the footage now so much that we quote you two.
That's terrific.
I love that.
Hey, yeah. Thanks. I look forward to getting, at some point, hopefully I can connect with you social media. We can do, you know, separate interviews and get the full 7 questions for you. But my time's up. So thank you so much for coming on Black and a Half and chatting with me today. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed the film. And I'm looking forward to seeing it break out all over.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Silas.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Impressive.